We are so pleased to have you here, all ready to participate in this groundbreaking convening of state and local educators focused on special education. Today, we are placing the spotlight on special ed in our region, and we will provide an opportunity for school leaders, parents, agencies, higher education leaders, policymakers, and advocates to discuss the challenges and barriers and the best practices occurring throughout the 8 counties of Western New York. Our goal at the completion of this summit is to ensure that the purposeful, passionate, and carefully considered work demonstrated here today, we will create recommendations for solutions so our children will have every opportunity available that will allow them to achieve their highest potential. This means that our work will not end here, but will be the catalyst to affect ongoing positive change. The summit is based on the framework of the New York State Board of Regents Blueprint for Improved Results for Students with Disabilities that was released in October of 2015. As such, we are very pleased to have with us Regent Catherine Fisher Collins, who represents our 8th Judicial District. Regent Collins's educational background includes undergraduate degrees from Trocare College in nursing and from the State University College in vocational technical education. She also earned her doctoral degree from the State University of New York at Buffalo in education administration, as well as a master's degree in allied health education and curriculum development. Regent Collins is also a nurse practitioner. She has held positions both in healthcare and education administration throughout the Western New York community, acting as a strong advocate in promoting the success of all students in New York State. Certainly, with her healthcare and education expertise and ties to many leaders in Western New York, including Dr. Robert Warner, who was a pioneer in advocacy for children with special needs, it is our pleasure to have her here to introduce and participate in our panel with the New York State Education Department Deputy Commissioners. I give you Dr. Catherine Fisher Collins.
Thank you so much for those kind words of welcome. On behalf of Chancellor Rosa, the Board of Regents, and our Commissioner Ilya, I would like to welcome all of you today to a very special event, Birth to Work, a symposium on special education. I'd like to, again, thank Children's Guild Foundation, United Way of Buffalo and Erie County, and the Peter and Elizabeth Tower Foundation for helping to make today's event possible. If they are in the room, we're going to give them a round of applause. We recognize that all children need our full resources and attention, support of positive learning and well-being. As a nurse practitioner, I understand the critical role that environment, nutrition, poverty, nurturing play in a person's physical and emotional and intellectual development. And we all know, of course, that children with disabilities require additional specialized resources and attention. We know, for example, that early intervention and care is critical. We know that preschool and service agencies' engagement is essential. We know that transition into an integrated school setting is often very important. We know that a well-articulated and executed, and I say executed, individualized educational program is invaluable. We know that parent and community involvement is vital. We also know that a well-planned and managed transition to adult and life and services, including career employment, is an ultimate goal. Finally, we also know that what we do to recognize and support the special needs of children will impact their ability to live independent and self-directed lives. I simply can't overstate the value of what we do to transition our children with special needs from birth to work. Together with my colleagues on the Board of Regents, I am committed to making sure that we follow through on goals that...
Good morning, everyone. Okay, let's try that again. Good morning, everyone. All right, we can do better than that. Let's start off the day strong. Good morning. Okay, thank you. I didn't know if I was going to have to ask again. So my name is Angelica Infante. I'm going to tell you a little bit about myself and the work that I do, and then we're going to talk about solutions. And so last night I came with a PowerPoint presentation. As I heard the discussion this morning, I changed it twice. And now I think I may not use some of the slides. But what I want to do is engage you in a conversation that's very near and dear to my heart and the work that we all do. How many of you are parents with students that are differently abled? Okay. How many of you are educators? Okay. So I happen to be both. So I have that privilege. And I'm very excited to share my journey with you and the kind of work and the vision that we have for the Office of Special Education moving forward. So that is my son, Asher Green, who is 8 years old and is on the autism spectrum. So my son was diagnosed at 18 months, officially diagnosed. So when he was very young, I remember saying, something's not right. But as a new parent, you just don't know. And my family's from the Dominican Republic, and when kids are not talking, oh, your cousin talked at 7. Or so-and-so talked at whatever, and you're just like, oh yeah, and he's a boy, it doesn't really matter. But you know, as a parent, you know. So we went, got him evaluated through early intervention, which I cannot sing their praises enough. And he kept getting evaluated, so he got speech, he got OT, he got PT, he got ABA, but no one told us what his diagnosis was. And then somebody came to my house, a psychologist, and said, he's got a communicative disorder. I was so relieved. I remember calling my husband and said, at least it's not autism. And then we sat down and said, oh, it is autism. And your life changes. That moment, everything you had planned shifts and changes. You have all these ideas of what your child will do, what school they'll go to, what kind of services they'll receive. That all changes. And you go through all these stages. So the first few months, we cried. Every time I saw an autism commercial, crying for like 15 minutes. Then you would talk to people, and you would learn. And I remember feeling guilty. Maybe I drank soda when I was pregnant. Maybe I did this. Maybe I didn't rest enough. So you go through all these stages as a parent. And I remember my husband saying to me, we need to talk about it. And I didn't want to talk about it. It felt very private. And I remember my husband saying, well, we can't learn, can't share if we don't talk about it. So the first time that I ever told anyone that my son was on the spectrum was to a room of about 600 teachers. And after I finished talking, I literally had about 200 teachers come approach me, as professional and as parents. So I'm gonna give you a little bit more about my journey and then I'm gonna move on. So I only speak to my children in Spanish. So what do you think happened when he was evaluated? What was the first thing that they told me? Take a guess. No, they didn't say that, what do you think they said when I said I only speak to him in Spanish? I'm a bad, well, they better not say that. They clearly don't know me. No, but they said you're doing him a disservice. He has a communicative disorder. How can you be talking to him in Spanish? And my husband only speaks English. So for a split second, I said, my gosh, am I letting my philosophy get in the way of what's good for my child? So my background is, I was a bilingual teacher. I speak two languages.
My husband thinks he speaks Spanish, but he really doesn't. But he speaks French, he speaks whatever, you know, he does what he does. But the reality is that I had to fight the therapist, the evaluator, sitting in my living room telling me that she was going to evaluate my son in English. I said, okay. So you might as well diagnose him now. I'm telling you, he speaks Spanish. So we go back and forth. So, you know, we're going back and forth, and the woman is, you know, whatever. She's quoting research from the 1970s. I'm quoting, you know, what I know, that I think I know. And my husband's going time out in my living room. And eventually, we decide to give them both. And I share this quick story, and I said this to her, and it kind of resonated with her. I think that we're all stuck in the place of what we know, right? We know what we know. But this all changes. Kids are different than they were 10 years ago, 5 years ago, even last year. So I remember we went to a colleague's house. My son locked himself in the bathroom. The joys of parenthood, all parents. And we couldn't get him out of the bathroom. And we kept saying, Asher, please, you know, open the door. We hear him opening water, you know, faucets and all sorts of things. And it's a brand new house. And now we're thinking it's on the second floor. My husband's thinking of scaling through a window. You know, they're getting screwdrivers. All these crazy things are going through our mind. And then I said, Asher, abre la puerta. He opened the door. When you're bilingual, you don't automatically know things in two languages. Just because I know table in English doesn't mean I know it in Spanish. That's how learning happens. It's not linear. So I made sure that he was evaluated in both languages. Not that it made that much of a difference, because we know he's on the spectrum. We clearly knew that. But what was interesting, what kind of services does he get? Where does he end up? So I want us to think out of the box. Regents Collins talked about solutions. Today is about solutions. We know the law. We know regulations. I want you to put that aside and think about what's right for children. That's what we're going to do here today. Because when you think about that, and when I think about it, that's who I think about. And I'll share stories throughout the day, because it must be a nightmare to have me as a parent, right? My son is in a second grade public school. But I'll tell you a little bit about the program that he's in. He's in an inclusion program for autistic kids. Do you have any like that here in Buffalo? So let me tell you what it looks like. 4 kids on the spectrum, 12 typically developing kids. One other thing that's very important, if we move forward, and we will move forward, language is very important. Our expectations determine the outcomes. So you will never, ever, ever hear me say disabled children. What does the suffix dis mean? What does it mean? Can't. I'll be damned if somebody tells me my kid can't do something. So the language that I will use moving forward is differently abled. Because it's very different. The way we approach the problem and the solution is different. So the program that he's in, 4 kids on the spectrum, and I'm not talking about Asperger's, kids on the spectrum, 12 typically developing, 2 teachers. Everybody gets speech. The whole class. OT, the whole class. So if you have sensory, guess what? They can chew gum. If that helps you think, so what? They chew gum. Everybody in the class has a sensory diet. They have it on their desk. Because how many of you twirl your hair? Sit next to me, I'll shake the table. Move my leg. It's what we do. How do we learn best? How many of you draw when people are talking? We have to figure out how kids learn. And the problem is that we've been putting them in a box that we created. That's what we've been doing. You have to sit straight. You have to do this. You can't chew gum. You can't move. Why? So I'm going to challenge us to think out of the box. And we're going to move on from our principles. Many of you have seen the Blueprint for Improved Results for Students with Disabilities, right? Yes. Mm-hmm. Right, so we're going to talk a little bit about it. I was going to go through the research. I'm not going to do that. because I think I want us to go through bullet by bullet and really understand what is meant by that and challenge what we think. So I'll give you an example. We had a parent-teacher conference, because I go to my son's school a lot. He has problems writing. He has very light, when he writes. So writing for him is difficult. So they had a vocabulary test. And they said, well, he didn't know the words. They said, he knew them at home, but you know, that's what all parents say, right, educators? They all know it at home. But what happened is, I know he knows it. He's on the spectrum. What do kids on the spectrum have? Good memories. So, and not only that, but we give him different ways to think about it. So what was the problem? He couldn't keep up with the writing. So are you evaluating his writing or his understanding of the vocabulary? Totally different. He hands in his paper. He wrote three words down while the other kids wrote two sentences. So you really can't tell me that my child doesn't understand the vocabulary. So what makes sense? Maybe assistive technology, maybe talking to him. So we have to really evaluate what kids know differently. Does that make sense to everybody in the room? Is that hard work? Yes. Do you need support to get that done? Yes. Do you need to be flexible? Absolutely. So my son's IEP at the beginning of the year looks different in the middle, at the end of the year. It has to. My son reads on grade level. Amazing. And I'll tell you this one story and I'm gonna move on. So when we, you know, we were proponents of higher standards, that's what I do. My son goes to school. Now it's scary, right? Now it's my kid. So my kid with a, you know, that's differently abled, walks into a class, is gonna be held to the same standards as everyone else. I remember sitting in my house one night and saying to my husband, I don't know about this. I don't know how my son is going to fare. And I remember my husband turning to me and saying, how dare you count our son out? And I think that has been the most humiliating day of my life. Because I got scared. And I think if you're a parent and you're an educator, you've been there. But how many of you have thought that kids can't do things and they end up doing them? Every day. Every day. Those of you that are not raising your hands, I'm watching. Because it's impossible. Kids surprise you. But you know what you have to do? You have to push them. So we're going to move on. Now that you know who I am and you know my son, I think you get a sense of what I believe in. And we're gonna move forward as a community. We have a vacancy for assistant commissioner. We have a new vision. And we're gonna be moving in a way where we're not just looking at the law. We have to abide by the law, but we have to think a little differently. And if it doesn't make sense, we challenge it. That's our job, okay? So the blueprint is really to set expectations for the state, school district, administrators, policymakers, and practitioners to improve instruction, prepare students with disabilities, which this will be the last time you see that word on a PowerPoint, for success beginning in preschool years. So we're starting from the very beginning. Ensure appropriate and early identification of students with disabilities, but appropriate identification. I want us to be very careful. If we misidentify a child, for behavior, for whatever it is, and that child does not need special education services, what do you think will happen? Take a guess. What was that? I don't, you know, somebody said lose funding, abuse. You know, they will need it eventually. That's right. How many kids do you know leave special education? How many? Maybe one? Two? So you have to be very careful when we identify kids. Do they actually need the services? And in order for that to happen, we have to look at what our interventions look like. Are your intervention services strong? Are they appropriate? Is it more of the same? I went to a school, actually here in Buffalo, who said, well, this is what we do for intervention. They were doing the same thing they did in the classroom. I said, okay, how's it working? So then why are you doing it? I think we have to be very thoughtful about, I shouldn't say I think, I know we have to be very thoughtful about what makes sense. And just because it works for some kids doesn't mean it works for all kids. So we've seen the blueprint. I'm not going to go over all of them, but I am going to talk to you about a few of them. So students engaged in self-advocacy are involved in determining their own educational goals and plans. How many of us already do that? And it's okay if we don't. It's okay if we don't. Some of you do. That's good. But what does that look like? And we're going to discuss that a little bit. Then the next one, parents and other family members are engaged in meaningful partners in special education process and education of their children. What does that look like? That's a paradigm shift. Because if you're bringing in a parent and you're just telling them, I have to tell you, parents know their kids better than you do. That's the bottom line. I know when the teachers know my kids. And I also know when they don't. And I know, because I'm an educator, been a teacher, an administrator, kids are different at home than in school. However, their essence is not, right? So how we engage with parents needs to be different. Number three, teachers design, provide, and assess the effectiveness of specially designed instruction to provide students with disability with access to participate and progress in general education curriculum. That's very important. It can't be a different curriculum. It can't. I told you that story because if I would have allowed my fear to get in the way, my son would not be reading at grade level. Math is another story, but like, it's a challenge for all kids. But we have to push them and give them the opportunity. And what that means is finding different ways to do it. Teachers provide research-based instructional teaching and learning strategies and supports for students with disability. I don't have to go into that, but I will in a little bit. Schools provide multi-tier system of behavior and academic support. Very important. So my son likes routines. If his teacher is going to be absent, guess what happens? Not me. All parents get an email. Kids have an IEP. We get an email that says, there's a change today. If you know beforehand, obviously, talk to your child. Because those of you that work with this population knows what happens. He's discombobulated for at least an hour. It's tough for him to change routines. How does that happen? Another thing that we do is that we have a communication notebook. Teacher communicates with me every day. Every day. Not just me, the parents in the class. And some of you may say, but how do they do that? They take turns. They figure it out. And I have to tell you that I appreciate that. I really appreciate it, and so did the other parents. We also have a listserv. Parents communicate with one another. Teachers are part of it. They don't have to. They can. They don't have to. But there's a space for us to talk about the homework. Guess what? 10 plus 3, but now I have to show it 10 different ways. You know, all that stuff that happens, right? I'm a parent. I get it. I get what's going on. You know, by the second time, I was like, whatever. Tell your teacher that 10 equals, you know, 10 and 3 equal 13, whatever. But the point is that we engage in that process and we have that dialogue. And in case you're thinking that my son goes to a very privileged school, that is not the case. My son goes to a school that's Title I, 90%. 35% students that are differently abled. Regular public school in New York City. So it's not a middle class public school, not at all. Schools provide high quality intensive programs and activities, inclusive. And inclusive means a lot of things. And inclusive, the success of an inclusive program, who determines that? Where do you think that happens? Sort of. CSCs, maybe. But where? Where does it happen? Classroom, but even bigger than that. The school environment. I can have a very inclusive class, but what happens when I go to the lunchroom? What happens in the playground? Or is that the class down the hall? An inclusive environment means that it's inclusive throughout the school building. That's where it starts. It can't be the special ed teacher doing it all. It's too much to ask for. If we're going to shift, it has to be an entire district, entire school shift. And I hear that there are questions. Well, that's what we're here to do today, to figure it out. Schools provide appropriate instruction for students with disability in career development and opportunities to participate in work-based training. I don't have to say much about that. How much time do I have? 2 minutes? Okay. I'm on slide two, 2 minutes. Okay. So this is very powerful, right? It's a very powerful picture because it really determines the outcomes. I have to tell you that we have to believe it. We have to. So when you look at the blueprint and you look at how you empower kids, I had the opportunity to talk to a parent, I'm not sure where they are, this morning, who said, you know, my child feels valued. I don't care who you are. If you don't feel valued as a professional, as a person, you are not going to give your best. How many of you have been in a job where you don't feel that what you say counts? We better all raise our hands. It's happened, right? Your performance is different. I don't care who you are. So we have to change that. We have to change what our expectations are, how we value, and how we bring them into play. Okay, since I have 2 minutes, I'm not going to go over all of them. But what I had here is kind of, for every principle, we have what it looks like, what it should be like. And what I'll do is I'll make sure that we can share the PowerPoint and then actions that you can take, because that's what we're going to be engaged today is in conversations. And I want you to see us as partners at the State Department. I know that we like to write a lot and we make things very complicated and, you know, our regulations are as clear as mud. I get that, right? But what we're trying to do is to change that a little bit, to be able to have the conversation with you, to be able to think out of the box. We're willing to do this work with you. It's not going to be easy. It's not going to happen overnight. But I think that we know that it needs to change. And I've talked to you about my son because I want you to understand the personal nature. But when 1 in 8 kids are being diagnosed, we better get on the ball. This is just not a certain segment of the population. We don't have a choice. But I have to tell you, they may have whatever kind of difference, but how many of them don't know how to work an iPad? They can do it. They can do anything. We just have to figure it out. We have been placing limits and hurdles. We just have to take those away. So I want to leave you with that, with you challenging us, pushing us, making sure you're asking the right questions, and ask us if there are things that don't make sense that we did. I can't account for the federal government, but we're willing to have that conversation. It is extremely important. And I want to take this opportunity to acknowledge the staff that's here today from SED. Could you please stand up for a second? They work for the Office of Special Education and are dedicated to this population and you in this region. So call on us. Call on us. And I want you, like I said, to hold us accountable because we're in this journey together. So I want to thank you for having me today. I want to give you enough time so that you can ask me questions. And we have to figure out how to partner between public, non-public, organizations. We can't do this alone. This is too big a journey, and today is a testament to how we can all work together, because this room is full of not just teachers, parents, educators, public school, but non-publics and different organizations that are committed to moving on this journey together. So I want to thank you, and I look forward to your questions. Thank you.
Let's give her another round of applause for the information that she's presented to us this morning. And you know, see how sensitive she is about it. Not only does she have the skills to take care of the Office of Special Ed and all the other things, and she's a parent, and she feels it. And I want to also mention to you that I have a nephew that also has autism. And so we know that the numbers are increasing, and we need to be prepared for it. She is going to be here with us to answer any questions that you may have. And I failed to introduce Robert Bennett, our former, Bob, would you please stand? Our former regent, and I should have done that at the beginning. He's been very instrumental in helping us to pull this program together. Now we'll hear from Mr. John Adagati.
So good morning again. I appreciate being here. I wanted to thank you for the invite, and certainly thank Regent Collins and Chancellor Meredith Bennett for pulling this all together, and my colleagues Angelica and Kevin. It's been a real pleasure working with them. So I just want to talk a little bit about the office and what we do and how we are integrated into the work that Angelica talked about. So I will just jump into it. The Office of Higher Ed is there to coordinate New York's higher education system and strengthen partnerships to achieve the most effective use of resources, improve educational access, opportunities, and student results. It's also there to ensure that a high-quality post-secondary education is available to all and provide students with the knowledge and skills to compete in a rapidly changing economy and actively contribute to society. So that is our main goal and objective. Within the Office of Higher Ed, we have two critical offices. One is the Office of College and University Evaluation, and the other is the Office of Teaching Initiatives. And these two offices are very critical to our conversation. The Office of College and University Evaluation is responsible for the approval of all degree programs based on a set of requirements established in regulation by the regents, including all teacher and school building leader preparation programs. So we, in that office, the regulations exist to determine what program, what is offered, what constitutes an approved program, what is required for a bachelor's degree in biology, what is required for a master's degree in fine arts. So this is a very powerful office because it has the regulations that are promulgated here and approved by the Board of Regents are what dictate what programs look like. Right down the hall is the Office of Teaching Initiatives, and they are responsible for ensuring that people who apply for teacher certification meet the requirements as established by the board. So those are two very powerful offices with the regulations that that we use to ensure the standards for all programs and teacher certification. So very briefly, and I don't want to get into a lot of the detail, but I've kind of laid out what the current requirements are. And you can see here, 30 semester hours in liberal arts and sciences, 30 semester hours in core content core, concepts in historical and social sciences, and then 21 semester hours of pedagogical courses. This is a general overview of the courses. And you can see that there's not a lot of specificity here, but this is the general requirements for students seeking a special education certificate. The next slide talks about the additional requirements, and these are the certification assessments that everyone has to take in order to obtain a certificate. So you'll see here, you have to get your institution's recommendation, but you also then have to pass the academic literacy skills test, the educating all students test, the content and or multi-subject exam, and the content special students with disabilities exam, as well as the performance assessment. So the requirements for obtaining a certificate, not only the coursework, but are also include all of these certification exam requirements that you have to pass. For teachers, the other pathway that we find many people go through is somebody who is already certified and then wants to get their special education certificate. And so they need to take additional coursework. And here, these are the general descriptions of the types of courses you would have to take. Assessment, diagnosis, and evaluation of students with disabilities, curriculum and instruction for students with disabilities, managing the environment, and foundations of special education. So these are additional pedagogical courses if you already have a certificate and you want to get a second certificate. In addition, there are the workshops that are required, which are all mandated by law. And so finally, what I really wanted to just talk a little bit more about is the challenges and the leadership that we need to advance this conversation. Building on what my colleague Angelica talked about, those are the current regulations, but the question is, what do we need to do differently? We need leaders from both P-12 and higher ed to work together to ensure that students are receiving the very best education. If there are gaps in the preparation of our teachers or our leaders, we need to identify those gaps and we need to address them. And that is part of what the conversation will be here today. When somebody comes out of a program, are there things that they should have known that they do not know? Are there experiences they should have had that they have not had? What should their clinical work look like? Are there certain competencies that we need to incorporate into that clinical work? What kind of content knowledge do they need? We've had an ongoing debate within the department, and Helic and I have both been in and out on this. How much math does a special education teacher need to know if they are working in an integrated classroom at a 7-12 level supporting the math teacher? It's an open question, but we need to zero in on this and get it right. And, you know, the part of the challenge also is that we want to have these high standards. We need to have special ed teachers in the classroom that know what they're doing. But we also have the challenge of the fact that for many, many years and continuing today, there are shortages of special ed teachers certified in New York. And how do we address those shortages? If you're going to, the concern obviously is if you raise the bar for entry into the profession, you will run into more shortages in this. So where do you set that balance? We've got to have that conversation. So I will just, in closing, I don't want to take a lot of time, but I will just relate to you. For many years, I worked in the state legislature. And one of the things that very often happens, I'm sure you've all heard of this, is that in trying to get a budget done or you're trying to close out the end of session, staff goes into a room, sometimes at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and they write legislation. And the next morning is when people see it. This is not a good process. I've learned that on several occasions. Because we don't know what you know. You are the practitioners, both in higher ed and P-12. You work this, you work on a day-to-day basis. Staff cannot know what you know. So along the lines that Angelica spoke about, we need you, the professionals in the field, to work very closely with us to figure out and drill down into the policy issues and the questions about content knowledge and clinical practice and where do we set the bar for entry and how do we improve recruitment and how do we get the best talent into the room. So I'm looking forward to the conversation today. It's a great challenge, but we also have great leadership at the department and certainly with the Board of Regents, the members of the Regents, who clearly want to support efforts to address these issues. So again, I look forward to participating for the rest of the day, and I thank you so much for your time this morning. Thank you.
Let's give John another round of applause for a really important office, another important office at the state level. And now we'll hear from Kevin Smith, who is going to come up and give us some insight into his office as well.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you, Regent Collins. It's a pleasure to be here with you. It's a pleasure to be home. This is home. I grew up here. I've lived here all my life. I raised my children here. My children attended Buffalo Public Schools. School is a means. It's a pathway. It's a pathway to the rest of children's lives. And I think sometimes we forget that. We forget that what we do with children during their time in school will inform who they are and how well they are able to independently live the rest of their lives. We think of school all too often as a beginning, a middle, and an end, and it's just the beginning. Children with special needs, differently abled, need all the care that we can provide them, as Regent Collins said in her opening remarks. I'm the father of three wonderful children. They are all differently abled. They all attended, again, Buffalo Public Schools. They all went to City Honors High School. My wife and I had the same expectations, and Helica is so right to emphasize our expectations. We held the same expectations for each of our children before they were born, not knowing who they would be or what would arrive, boy, girl, fully abled, not fully abled. Our daughter, our beautiful Sarah, came to us very, very early. Buffalo Children's Hospital, thank you very much. They were experimenting at that time with San Diego Children's Hospital with a new drug called surfactant, which allowed premature babies' lungs to lubricate and be able to breathe. Too many premature children died because their lungs had not fully developed. Our daughter survived because she happened to be born in Buffalo, two blocks away from Buffalo Children's Hospital. The words that still ring in my head those early days are paraventricular leukomalacia. I'll never forget those words. We went to the UB Medical Library the next morning to look up what it meant. I'm an English major, low Fredonia. I thought I understood the English language, but I sure didn't understand that. Ischemia, loss of oxygen, brain damage, quadriplegia. She's been in a wheelchair since she's 4 years old, and she has commanded that chair and her world since the day she was born. Having an expectation for Sarah to be the same as her big brothers proved to be a full-time enterprise for Mom and I. Campus West, on the backside of Buff State, when it was still a full-blown teacher's college, we got some great support. City Honors, getting into City Honors, the only child with a visible disability at City Honors from fifth grade through high school. Wow. A child without peers. A young lady without really friends during her developmental years. She was the only kid in that building riding around on a big old 300-pound wheelchair for all those years. The elevator at City Honors, it was a 4.5-year sojourn of mine. It was an old freight elevator. She'd come in the bottom floor, the basement, every morning. The basement was where the lockers were, where the lunchroom was. It wasn't a full-blown basement, but not, for those of you who know it, not a pretty place. Only the custodian could have the little key to allow him to operate the elevator. She couldn't independently, nor could her aide independently operate. You could look up in that elevator and see the wires, and every once in a while they would bump and they would arc. It was not a safe place. I got on the bandwagon and I said, you know, City Honors, you need a new elevator. I won't mention names, but they told me no. 4.5 years later, it was an historic preservation building. They couldn't put a new elevator in. The stories went on and on and on. Based on my employment, I knew some folks in Albany. I got very engaged with a particular assemblyman who still to this day tells me that they hate him for advocating for that elevator at City Honors. I never let up. We never let up. She never let up. The stories go on and on and on. What are we going to do in a fire drill? You'll figure it out, we advised. Then the security officer told me that four of the biggest boys in the building, five actually, during a fire drill, would take her out of her chair and carry her down those slippery marble stairs and lay her down on the lawn during a fire drill. No, that's not what we're going to do. We're going to get the fire department over here. She's going to find a location. They're going to know where she's going to be, but you're not carrying my daughter down marble stairs. Even the security guard understood how dangerous that was to do that. Wrote a paper one time. Teacher said, you didn't write that, your aide wrote it. Went to summer school. This was a City Honors student. Went to summer school. Summer school, the only way they could treat her is to have her reading Dick and Jane. We had to change the rules in order for her to do her summer reading from City Honors during summer school. She was fully capable. Graduated cum laude in social work with a master's degree from Edinburgh University. Can't quite find a job. I'm in the voc rehab business. So I tell my daughter all the time, you're a social worker, get your voc rehab master's. I know somebody, maybe I can help you find a job. I don't want to be a voc rehab counselor, Dad. I want to be a social worker. We don't do as well as we can and should in assisting and supporting all of our children to understand career exposure, employment experience, and opportunities. All of our children need those opportunities. Many of those opportunities have been wiped out for our children. Used to work at Carroll's on Main Street. Anybody remember Carroll's on Main Street? You as old as I am? No. I'm a Bishop Newman product, Christ the King. Thank you to our... They tried. One of seven children. So you know me. I'm one of you. I'm from Western New York. I'm from Buffalo. Grew up in Amherst. I know this town. I love this town. The important thing for us to do, and my colleagues have done it extremely well, is to connect with you, to make sure that you understand, that we know that we need to do better, not just for our differently abled children, but for all of our children, for our children of color, for our children who don't speak English as a first language, for our special education students, all of them. Transitioning into school, transitioning through school, and transitioning out of school. We focus on transition out of school. We spend too little time focusing about transition into school and through school for all of our children. To the degree that we blur the lines between our differently abled and our general population, we are doing all of our children a great service. And Helica's story is a great one. To the degree that we are offering all these services to all of our children, we don't differentiate between and among any of them, and nor should we. And we are doing what we need to do to make sure that all of our children recognize, understand all of the differences of all of their young colleagues in school so that when they enter community, they have that exposure, that understanding, and the full tolerance that we do not see in our communities today. That is full inclusion. That is the community that schools should replicate so that we replicate it outside, in our communities, in our neighborhoods, and in our towns and cities, and in our state and in our nation. We don't have it. We know we don't have it. I recall transition into school for my daughter. Again, she got her first wheelchair when she was 4 years old. It had to be red. It was red. And it had flames on it. Of course, it had flames on it. She went to a fully inclusive daycare over on Military. And we had I only remember her as a strong German woman. And she had very high expectations for Sarah, but she had even higher expectations for Mom and I. She had very high expectations for Mom and I. And she would bring us in on a regular basis and remind us, do not lower your expectations for this young lady. We went through, as all of us do, in the biggest lonely club of all, the same doubts, the same concerns, the same issues that all of us go through with all of our children, but those of us with differently abled children especially. She was a great influence on our life. And there were many, many, many educators who were through the pathway, through the journey, that reminded us when we lost faith, when we had doubts about any or each of our children's abilities to continue, don't give up. Keep fighting. CSE meetings. I was blessed. The CSE chair and I shared hockey tickets together. He knew me, I knew him. We had a relationship. So when there was a teacher up on my front porch telling my wife that we were making a big mistake by expecting our daughter to attend City Honors High School, I was able to pick up the phone and call my friend and say, are we wrong? You did the test, you ran all the psychs. Are we wrong? No, Kevin, you're not wrong. Push it, do it. Hold those expectations. The challenge of focusing on her cognitive development, her learning, at the expense of her social development. The only child in that building from 5th to 12th grade without in a wheelchair. I can only imagine what she went through every single day. There were days her brothers didn't say hi to her. If I found out, it didn't go well for them, but you can understand it. They're young men. They're in school. They're running around with their buddies. They don't necessarily want to be associated with that kid. Tough as nails, this young lady. Tough as nails. Lots of days, lots and lots and lots of days. Fortunately, again, for transition out of high school, transition through high school, we hired Mr. Goldstein. We had our days. We fought. The day that I got a call from her that her aide was newly appointed to her, unable to lift her up and toilet her. And she said to me, Dad, they let dogs out when they have to go. I can't go to the bathroom. Didn't take me long to get down the 33 to be in that building to help her to go to the bathroom. And then I marched down to the principal's office and I came very close to being arrested that day. Very close to being arrested that day. As I say, I was a helicopter parent for my sons. I was an F-14 fighter parent for my daughter. It should not take that. Not for any of us. It should not take that level of involvement in order to get our children the services and the care and the education that they need. I didn't know, after Angelica spoke, I said, I'm going to go for it. I'm going to share my story. You never know. I am now responsible for vocational rehabilitation services, 15 district offices across the state providing employment supports for differently abled adults. We do a lot of work in transition. We're improving and increasing our work in transition and working more closely every day with our colleagues in special education, committees on special education. We've included an advanced, and I have a couple of colleagues here in the room, we have senior transition counselors in every office across the state to be more involved. We have community education specialists now. These are all new to our role and our work. The new Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, just so you know, I know a little bit about the work that I do. I'll throw some of this stuff out as well. Workforce Innovation Act, recently signed into law by the president in 2014, calls for more support and services to transition age youth. Voc Rehab, Access Voc Rehab already serves nearly 50% of our consumers are in the age cohort of youth. This is a big lift for us. It's a big challenge. We know that they have a longer trajectory to employment. Our goal, our outcome expectation from the federal government and our own is employment. We know, I believe, that if we engage early, often, if we get the full array of services and supports, all the adult services providing services to individuals with disabilities, differently abled, OPWDD, OMH, OASIS, you name them, all the O agencies, we work Department of Labor, in particular Department of Labor, no more presenting as a person with a disability at the Department of Labor one stop and being told to either wait or go back and talk to that person in the back. Full range of services. We're working very, 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 very hard to make sure that all folks who enter the Department of Labor one stops are equally treated and properly treated. Employment opportunities, the demand side, woefully underaddressed, woefully underdeveloped. We simply must do everything and anything that we can, all the sticks and all the carrots, to make sure that our employers employ people with disabilities. And Halleck has said it, 1 out of 8 being diagnosed every day. This is our reality, folks. Differently abled are the largest minority population in the country. Their employment rates hover forever in the mid 30%. 30%. It's a national disgrace. There's no other way to look at it. We work very, very hard every day to try to change those numbers. We work on the supply side. We interact with our fellow colleagues in the New York State government, in the federal government. We spend a lot of money. A lot of resource goes into this. What we don't do well, in my opinion, is work on the demand side, making sure that our employers employ more people with disabilities. Incentivize it, demand it. Tax breaks should be coupled with requirements for hiring. Federal government has a goal of 7% employment for all people with disabilities for all federal contractors. It's a goal. New York State doesn't have one. What if every single state contractor were held responsible to hire even 1% of people with disabilities? Why not? Carrots and sticks, whatever we need to do. I also oversee adult education and the high school equivalency exam. Far too many of our students with disabilities, differently abled students, end up not graduating or not having a meaningful diploma or credential and end up taking the high school equivalency exam. We've just introduced, it's been around for a long time. The National External Diploma Program, anybody familiar? NEDP is a performance assessment. It's 70 competencies that a student will demonstrate their competency in those 70 areas over the course of time. It's not a high stakes exam. We've just made it a pathway to the state high school equivalency diploma. The final piece of my portfolio is proprietary schools. 390 non-degree granting schools that offer everything from cosmetology to allied health to coding to dog grooming and bartending. You name it, it's tuition based and it doesn't end up in a degree, we license it. School counselors don't know anything about our proprietary schools and they're not offering that opportunity to any of our students and they're not preparing students for those pathways. Very viable. Everybody in this room reaches into their wallet almost daily and pays someone for services rendered by someone who has been trained in a proprietary school. Every day. We're going to look down our nose at those employment opportunities? We shouldn't. Career and technical education. We're talking about it. We're re-engineering it. We're reinventing it. We're bringing it back. We're modernizing it. Let's go. Let's get on the bandwagon. Bringing community services into our schools. What's our reluctance? Why aren't we? These children need all of our care, all of our services. Is it hard? It's hard. Is it logistically difficult? Yes, it's logistically difficult. Every family with a differently abled child should be introduced to the agency that will provide services after school as early as possible. As early as possible. The agencies should all know who's coming. The kids on the spectrum bubble is coming. We know it's coming, but we're not sure what to do with it. What are the employment opportunities for those young people? As Angelica indicated with her son, they've got great skills. They've got skills that if we identify them and we help our businesses and our manufacturers and our others to understand what those skills are, they're going to value those skills. They do value those skills. How can we hone them? How can we articulate them? How can we make sure that the young people on the spectrum learn the other skills to be able to work and use the skills that they have by nature of their different ability to be able to live independently, more independently? Finally, I want to address the transition out of school. It's our job. It's the rest of these young people's lives, for all of our children. I wish my sons had transition services out of school. They need it just as much as my daughter did. Where am I going to go? What am I going to do? They went to college. They did the traditional thing. They partied on mom's dime. They got their degrees. And now they're trying to figure out what they really want to do. They're in their early 30s. Following after their dad's footsteps, as my wife reminds me every day. Lo Fredonia. Lo Fredonia. It was the 70s. Come on. I didn't know Deputy Commissioner of the New York State Education Department was a career destination. But here I am. And Angelica said it. John said it. We want you to know that we know. We know personally, we know professionally, we understand that there's a lot of work to be done. Not just for differently abled children, but for all children. Our efforts to try to, I'll use the air quote, reform education, is in the best interest. John said it right. It's in the best interest, but if it's not informed by your voice, then we don't have a chance of getting it right. Today is about your voice. I wish that Angelica were the deputy commissioner when my daughter was coming up through special education. I have to remark, that was wow. She's doing great. We had high expectations for her. We need to have higher expectations for all of our children every day. You all are on their journeys. You all guide their journeys. You're all part of their journeys. It's about individuals. It's about our schools. It's about our leaders. It's about our parents. Don't stand down, stand up. Go forward, I think they're up to F-16 fighters now, or maybe even higher, maybe F-20s. Be the strongest advocate and the strongest voice you can possibly be. Have a great day. We look forward to your questions. Would you come?